the best advice for somebody who's new is the number one thing they don't want to hear, but it's to just start slow. If you want to do something in a sustainable way, like we had already talked about, like you have to add things little by little. You have to create those habits and that second nature. Otherwise, it becomes overwhelming and you get burnt out really easily.
My name is Lisa, mother of 8 and creator of the blog and YouTube channel Farmhouse on Boone. Join me as I share with you my love for creating a handmade home from scratch cooking and a little mom and entrepreneur life along the way. Welcome back to the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. Today, I'm having on Beth DeClercq. She's on Instagram, YouTube under her name, but then also on intentionalhomesteading.com with over a decade of homesteading experience, 7 kids. She just has a lot of experience with integrating homesteading into your family life and getting started. I think she has a lot of encouragement and wisdom to share. So let's dive into this great conversation. Beth, welcome on. I'm so glad to have you on. And we were talking about your internet a bit. And just so you know, it's very normal for the homesteading guests to never have good internet. So this is like par for the course whenever I have on somebody to talk about homesteading. So no worries there. Let's start first with introductions. So tell us about yourself and your homestead and what you share online in a nutshell.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. I am Beth DeClercq, and I live in mid-Michigan with my husband, Tommy. We have 7 kids, and we have a small 5-acre homestead that we are going into our 5th summer growing here, I think, 5th summer. But we've been homesteading at like some capacity over the last about 12 years or so.
Nice. Okay. So 7 kids. One of the most common questions I get when it comes to homesteading and having 8 kids is, you know, this is a loaded question, but how on earth are you able to get all of that done while also, you know, having the kids? Maybe I'm presuming you probably cook from scratch some, maybe you even homeschool. I don't know. What all do you do and how do you get it done?
So to give you kind of a overview of what we have, yes, lots of cooking from scratch. I mean, the whole kind of driving factor for homesteading is the food production, right? You want good food. And we have at various times of the year, you know, different animal loads. Right now we have 2 milk cows and a laying flock, but we also seasonally raise several hundred meat chickens. We raise all our own pork. And of course, garden as well. And it's a lot. I think that we've been doing it long enough that I'm kind of removed and I don't realize how much we do at this point. But that kind of leads into the answer to your other question of how you do that. And first of all, it was a gradual progression. You know, it's kind of like,
yes,
when you go into parenthood, we didn't immediately go into 7 kids. We added 1 at a time. Most people do.
Right.
And so as you get used to having things, you can add a little bit more and add a little bit more as your capacity grows. But on the other side of that, I will also be very transparent to say that I don't do it all. There are seasons where I am cleaning my house very regularly, and there are seasons where I do not touch my house because I am knee deep in butchering or preservation. And I think that is just the reality. If you're not willing to outsource something, just accept that there will be seasons of neglect to certain aspects of your home.
Right. Yes. So it's very nuanced conversation to ask, like, well, what things do you let go? Like, because people always ask me, you know, like, how does this all work? And it's such, like, it's so hard to explain how it works because you'd almost have to watch somebody, like, I'd have to observe you for a week straight and probably then some, like, through different seasons, through you having a newborn, you know, all these different things for me to actually figure out, like, how it works. It's so hard to conceptualize it without actually seeing it. And like you said, your capacity grows, which is one piece of it. But then also, there's probably certain habits that you've gotten yourself into that maybe we don't even, like, can't even know that we're not doing certain things. You know, that's what I find with other people when people say they do certain things, like, well, wait a minute, how's that get done? And they probably have some kind of habit built around it or something that, like, I don't quite, like, I'm just not doing in the same way. Like, for example, I want to start working out and I still have been talking about that for months. I have figured out in other areas of my life how to get a lot done because I've built habits around it. I've built momentum around it. Things have gradually increased with my capacity, but yet that is something I still can't figure out how people get done. So with all of that, what is like a typical day right now in the winter with the kids that you currently have? I don't really know what your ages are, look like, just like a very maybe broad view of what that looks like.
Yeah, I completely agree with you that habits get established and they become second nature. And you don't even realize that what once was hard was actually just new. And you work up a rhythm for it. But my family is actually very similar to yours, Lisa. I have 7. My oldest is almost 14. And then my youngest actually turns 1 tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
So very.
Oh, yeah. Yours is exactly like mine, literally just a year ago.
Yes. Very, very similar. And so, and we do homeschool. I didn't mention that, but we do homeschool. And this time of year is wonderful because it's slow. It's kind of the recovery season. And that means we give a lot of attention to, you know, house projects and the things that aren't, you know, food-based. We're working on doing a little kitchen remodel and a lot of just kind of planning and strategizing and budgeting for what we're going to do during the busy season, which really is kind of May to November-ish typically for us.
Right. Yeah.
But otherwise, our flow is really, really, for being homesteaders, I think people assume that you have to be like working 16-hour days every day of the year. And though there is, you know, constant needs. Like I have to milk the cow every day. I have to, you know, make sure that waters aren't frozen. We wake up, we sit by the wood stove and have breakfast. We do school. And then after lunch is, you know, kind of free time and afternoon chores. And then we go into evening activities. And I really cherish this time of year because it balances out the busyness of the other seasons where, you know, we're in the garden before it gets hot. And then after it cools down for the day and it feels like we don't stop for 3 or 4 or 5 months straight, but you really come to appreciate the seasons for what they are versus trying to force a consistent routine year round, I have found. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of the thing is I know how much it all changes with the seasons and also with the ages of your kids. So at this point you have teenagers, you have toddlers, you have a baby, you have a baby, but not like a baby that's waking up all night. Maybe not. But, you know, it always feels very different based on a lot of those factors. And it's hard to like explain exactly how it works. But then, like you said, I feel the same way because I get the question all the time, like, you must never sleep. You must be up, you know, all day, every day, just, you know, working hard like all day. And I'm like, actually, in a lot of ways, a lot of days feel fairly laid back. Like you said, we'll wake up, drink coffee, sit by the fire. There are certain things that we have to get done. But I think probably the biggest thing with our family is there aren't a whole lot of outside obligations, like outside our home, whether that's various activities, sports, you know, and there's lots of good things people participate in, and that's a priority, and that's totally fine. But maybe they're trying to imagine fitting homesteading into a life that's already very packed out when really it's just a whole different approach from the very beginning to where it doesn't actually feel that crazy or that chaotic. At least that's been my experience. I am a little bit curious about you said 2 dairy cows. So what are you doing with all the milk? That has been such a struggle for me whenever I have a cow that is like fully in milk, freshly, you know, freshened. It's a really big job to keep up with all of that milk. Like I think I spent whenever my cow was just freshened, hours a day just processing all of that. What does that look like for you and your schedule?
So 2 cows with our size family was really, I mean, any size family could think this method, but we wanted to be able to overlap their lactations and not have, you know, a dry period for the 1 cow, which is what we had the first 2 years before we added the second one. Now, at this point, I actually have a cow that was due on Saturday, and I was so paranoid that I was going to come home before this interview and she was going to be in the middle of calving or something, but thankfully she wasn't. So she's due any day. And then the other cow is very late into her lactation. She's not due until June, but she's only giving 1.5 gallons a day right now, which Our family can drink a gallon in a day easily. Yeah, I don't even actually have a gallon enough right now to do a lot of fun things like yogurt or butter or cheese. But when we do get kind of that overlap where we're having double production and it's a large quantity, I'll be honest, I'm a terrible cheesemaker. I have like one of those skills that I just haven't mastered yet.
I have not admitted that yet on the podcast.
I know you're friends with Kate also. I have just been like, it's not my skill. It's yours. And I will just put mozzarella on everything because that's all I can master apparently. But I just haven't taken the time to master it.
Okay. My problem is I actually have, and I got it done. And like, it's just not very good. Like, I just don't know how else to put it. Like,
it's different.
The cheese that I've made, I think I did it right. Like, we just can't get used to it. Sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. We have a little bit of an internet lag for the listeners. If you think I'm interrupting, it's like, we aren't interrupting each other. We just can't literally hear each other.
You're fine. But yeah, when we have seasons of lots and lots of milk, you know, there's experimentation. There's kind of our go-to yogurt and butter and simple cheeses that I can make. And then otherwise, the beauty of it is that, you know, when you have a kind of holistic-minded homestead, there's no waste. So there's no like shame in giving excess milk to grow out pigs or even chickens or dogs or things like that. We thankfully haven't had a season in a while where it's been like 5 gallons every single day.
Yeah, that gets overwhelming quick.
Yeah.
Well, so I've done this whole dairy thing a lot of different ways. We milked goats for a whole year, and that's where you just get like a cute little amount of milk and you drink it and it's fine. You're done. And then we did a cow with calf sharing, which was very manageable. You could still go out of town. That was great, except for our cow. And I know that I think some cows, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, give cream even when they have a calf. Our cow gives no cream if she has a calf. She saves it all back. I even bring the calf out, have the calf nurse a bit, let it down. Still, the cream is just ridiculous. So that's where you get like a manageable amount. You can go on trips. It's like all beautiful, except no cream, which is such a bummer. It's like the reason for a dairy cow. Then I've also done no calf sharing, where like pretty quick, you know, you have no calf on the cow. And that's great because you get tons of cream, but you get so much milk that you need to spend 3 or 4 hours of your day doing cheese, butter, yogurt, I mean, ricotta, mozzarella, all the things. And then you also obviously can't go out of town for even a day because you have to be there twice a day. I have not figured out the perfect solution on this at all. I'm tempted to try dairy sheep because I understand that maybe their milk, like goats, is also very naturally homogenized. So I guess they can hold back the fatty part of the milk for their cat or their whatever you call their kid. Okay, that's dumb. What do you call a baby sheep?
Now I can't think of what it is either.
Lamb.
There you go. It's
a brain. Just a lamb, right?
Brain fart.
So anyways, okay. To help for all the listeners who are just curious about dairy, I know that's not really what this episode is necessarily about, but people have, you know, presented all these questions to me in a lot of ways. I don't have all the answers. I've tried it all and I see some very major pros and cons to all of those. What has been your experience on that?
Pretty similar. So we have actually always calf shared, and that has been, like you said, exclusively just for the convenience factor. I'm actually the sole milker in our family. I hand milk. And so we needed to have that backup option of like, oh, well, I'm going to have another baby or we want to go somewhere. Having the calf to put on is a wonderful convenience.
It is.
The one cow does not hold back like all of her cream, but it's definitely a lot of it. Like you definitely realize once you wean what you were missing out on. You thought it was good, but it was nothing. Cause we have jerseys too. I think yours is a jersey. Is it?
Yes.
Yes. So you expect that cream to be good, but
yes, it's like the whole thing. It's like the reason.
So yes, we actually plan to bottle feed this calf that we're expecting any day for the first time to see. But the thing is that I don't think that there's any perfect scenario. I think it's just what's the best scenario for the season that you're currently in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what are you willing to sacrifice of one thing for another thing? Are you willing to sacrifice some cream for the convenience of, you know, flexibility of calf sharing? That's fine for that season. If you are at the maximum production mode, you know, then you adjust for that. But what I have also found, I don't know what it is in your state, but in Michigan, you're legally allowed to sell raw milk through a herd share. So I will have a little mini herd share set up where I can sell my excess milk and I can utilize that money to buy things that I don't produce. And that's also a win for me because I'm still getting as much as I need. I'm not wasting it or feeling overwhelmed by it. And I'm also blessing somebody else that doesn't have access to it from their own farm.
Yeah, I think that probably is the best solution. I will say with the calf sharing thing, to me, it's just not a great solution. I know all homes, and this is probably controversial. I'm probably going to get so much like people who say, oh, it works great for this and this. I have heard how great it works and I just cannot get past the no cream thing because it's just the only reason I have a dairy cow. So anyways, that's just been my experience. And it's like very frustrating because I only hear all the wonderful things about it. And then in practice, it's really not that great because I mean, butter and cream is the reason to do it. So anyways, I think that you're going to really like not having...
You feel like shame buying butter at the grocery store. You're like, I have a milk cow. Why am I buying butter?
Yes. It's just not, and it's so fun to bring in all of that cream and process it into butter. I love it. I just also don't know what to do with all of the milk because then I don't want to really make that amount of cheese. And then now that we're on the other end of aging a bunch of cheese and it not really being that great, I'm still working it all out, honestly. But I know a lot of listeners are very curious about all of that. Currently, we are just getting our milk from a local farm again, because I have not figured out what to do with it all. It doesn't, I don't feel like I'm in my milkmaid era or whatever they say these days, of like spending 3 or 4 hours of my day figuring out how to process it all. And I was before I had the baby, and then now I'm like, you know.
Let's talk a bit about natural skincare. I have been getting more into skincare lately. I think this is just because as I'm getting older, I am noticing that my skin just doesn't, without any effort, look as beautiful as it used to. But no matter what, I don't want to be putting things on my skin that could affect my health in more than just like, sure, maybe my face would look better, but then I would have different health issues as what we put on our skin does make its way in. And so I've came across all kinds of products as I've been researching this. And when I dig deeper into the ingredients, I quickly am like, nope, going back to my tubes. I don't really care, because even though that would be something that would be very drastic, it isn't worth it for me. And I have found some beautiful ingredients and products with Tubes & Co. that work so wonderfully to hydrate my skin and really help with a lot of the concerns that I'm especially noticing right now as we're wrapping up winter and the air is so dry. I need some super hydration. So I have been loving the tonics and the serums. I put one on, like the tonic first, and then the serum that really helps it to absorb. And I'm feeling so much better about my skin. It is glowing with these. The glow serum is my favorite, but I'm also loving the Tubes & Co. makeup. I just recently got the Tubes & Co. blush. I've been wearing the foundation for a really long time. I like that, especially, you know, right now, I don't really want full coverage. I'm mostly just worried about an even skin color, but nothing too cakey. Again, as the skin ages, you don't want something dry and cakey. And I'm loving the Tubes & Co. foundation for that. I've been using that for a couple of years now. Tubes & Co. is sponsoring Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. So if you love this podcast, I really appreciate it whenever you support the sponsors. The sponsors that I genuinely love, like Tubes & Co. Tubes & Co. is offering 10% off your order with the code FARMHOUSE. So you can head to tubesandco.com, use the code FARMHOUSE, and try out some of these beautiful, all natural, organic, nothing in it that would be on any list, no matter which list you consult, as we're talking about like all the different information these days. every list would agree that these are quality ingredients and made right here in America. Again, head over to tubesandco.com.
Let's talk about people getting started. How can someone at the very beginning get started with homesteading? You've been doing this a while. You've been through lots of years of learning, setting everything up. What would you recommend for somebody brand new?
I think that the best advice for somebody who's new is like the number one thing they don't want to hear, but it's to just start slow. If you want to do something in a sustainable way, like we had already talked about, like you have to add things little by little. You have to create those habits and that second nature. Otherwise, it becomes overwhelming and you get burnt out really easily. I was kind of looking back, I was really blessed because when we first kind of got bit with the homesteading bug, which, mind you, I didn't say this, but we both grew up in, my husband and I, in pretty major cities. Like I didn't even see a real chicken until I was probably 21 years old.
Wow.
Like we did not have any base of like country living type skills. So I was bottom level. And I will tell an embarrassing story that I think is good for people to be encouraged by. But my domestic skills when I got married were so bad. I literally started our first apartment on fire because I was making chips and cheese and I didn't know you had to leave the oven open with the broiler and like filled the whole entire apartment building with smoke.
Oh,
terrible. Now I could make chips and cheese from scratch by milking my cow and you know, making the homemade tortillas and you know,
for everyone.
I've come a long way.
Yeah.
But it doesn't happen overnight. You have to add little by little. And when we first started, we did not have, you know, the budget to do anything I wanted to do. So I really focused on just gaining skills. I was canning food from the grocery store or from local farms. I was going and helping people butcher rabbits. I was just doing as many skill-based, you know, tasks that I could. So that when we got to the point of actually growing the food, I had already created that second nature from the other part of it. Because like with a milk cow, raising the cow and milking it is only half of the equation. Dealing with the milk is the other half. And I had been buying raw milk for 7 years before we got a milk cow. So I already knew how to skim cream and do butter and yogurt and, and a lot of those things versus trying to learn it all at once is just like, oh, what did I get into? So that would be my recommendation is start slowly, but really focus on the skills that you're going to need to get to the point that you want to be in the future.
Yes. And I think that is very encouraging to know that you weren't raised, you know, to know all of this stuff. You had to learn it because I think a lot of people think, well, I didn't grow up this way. Therefore, you know, I can't do this. And then also, I think another thing for people to consider is what is your reason for doing this? Is it to earn a little income by selling milk, or is it just to provide your family with milk? Because like with the dairy, for example, there might be better ways to achieve what you are trying to achieve with your family than going and buying a dairy cow and milking. And there might be, you know, there might be like, if you're considering what all of your goals are, is it to expose your kids to knowing where their food comes from? You have to think through all of the possible like whys to figure out what you should even do because you shouldn't necessarily do everything. So what would you say for you and your husband? What was the purpose of this? Like, how'd you get into it in the very beginning? And maybe that's changed over the years. So how has it changed?
So it has for sure. What started it was actually my second pregnancy. In 2011, I really wanted to give birth naturally. I had had a very traditional hospital birth with my first, and I just felt the desire to do it differently. And so we took a birthing class called the Bradley Method. And that was really the first time my eyes had ever been open to like real food. And like that was a term I didn't even know. I thought eating healthy was like counting calories or looking for labels that were low fat.
Yes.
And so that really opened my eyes to what whole food was and real food was. And, you know, that's slowly kind of started the snowball of changing our diets, which then led to sourcing food locally, which then led to, as our family size grew, not being able to afford to source things locally. So starting a garden and getting chickens. And as our family grew, our, you know, needs for food and our skills grew. So we were just able to produce more and more ourselves. And I think originally it was the health component was the motive for us, but over time, really just the appreciation and the connection of knowing what you have and just trying to be a good steward of the whole animal, you know, of the whole garden. There's so much food waste in the world right now that it's just, you don't realize until you have literally waited 4.5 months for that bell pepper to be ready for you to pick. Then you don't throw it away. You use it. You figure out a way to use it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So what would you say are your motivations now? Is it different? And by the way, your path really followed the same as mine. I had my first child, or I had my second child in 2010, and I had a bad experience with my first, did the exact same thing, went down the Bradley method, like learn whole food, like pretty much exactly what you did there, just maybe like 1 year before.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for us now, it's just, it's become our lifestyle. Like there's no choice to do it. This is just, this is how we are. And I'm grateful that our kids, they're fully bought in. Like they really do love it. They have no desire to go live in town or to go, you know, just buy all of our food. We have grown really, really spoiled to just have mass amounts of food stockpiled at any time to, you know, utilize. And there's obviously a lot of security that comes from being a large family, having a lot of mouths to feed and having, you know, not 100% control over our nourishment, but having a lot of it. I mean, if it came to it and my husband couldn't go to work and, you know, was missing out on paychecks, I could feed us for a long time because we have the skills and the resources and the ability to be resourceful with our pantry. And that as a mom gives me a lot of security because I don't have to compromise the most important component, even if they can't do extracurricular activities or whatnot, like they will be fed. They'll be fed well. And that is definitely a big motivator for us.
Yeah. And all the things that you have to learn whenever you grow food from scratch, you need to learn how to use that because you're not going to waste it. You need to learn how to, what to do with the milk, what to do with all the veggies. This gives you skills that even if you someday don't want to do homesteading anymore, you can be very creative. You can look into a refrigerator, see very few items or your pantry and know how to throw together a meal. You know, no matter what, these are skills that are going to serve you really well. It's a learning curve that will forever make an impact on you. So I think that it's important, even if it's not something that you see yourself doing necessarily long term. Now for you guys in this upcoming year, do you have some goals or how do you want to expand? Are you at scale with your homestead? You just like the way it is now? Or do you have constant like things that you want to keep improving or adding?
So we are on our 5 acres pretty much maxed out capacity wise, as far as what we are producing. And I feel very content with that. I'm not saying that like I wouldn't want to expand to more property later, but we have infrastructure set up here now that is, you know, just kind of at the point where it's producing, but it can be streamlined and be more efficient, which again, if you are raising a family on top of homesteading, having systems that work really well is going to make your limited time to do things just that much more efficient. So we actually don't have big plans to add new things. We do several hundred meat chickens each summertime, both for ourselves and for other families. We do a few pigs each year. We'll have a few calves born and also our gardens, of course. But all of that is kind of what we've done the last 2 years. We just have a lot of little areas that are like, okay, we need to actually like create a system to organize this.
Right.
We need to rotate this pasture better. And, you know, also fun projects that are just beauty based, you know, they're not production based, but they improve a space to make you enjoy working there more, which I think is just as important to make sure you have a balance of as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That's kind of where I guess, well, there's a lot more we could do with our homestead, honestly, but I don't know that we necessarily want to. I think we're in a good spot. I mean, at some point we're going to get the cow back in milk. Right now, I think we're kind of enjoying our break. We have a few trips planned. And so we're like, let's just see how that works for a little bit. And then we'll go back into milk. But with that, one of the audience questions was how to know when something isn't working out for your homestead, like having a certain animal, or, you know, when do you know if you should try something else? This person says with a business, if it doesn't profit or if it isn't profitable, you probably shouldn't do it. But with a homestead, it's different. It's a different kind of investment. Have you had experiences like that over your 12 years? I mean, I'm sure you have.
I probably have. I think that I'm definitely like a over-preparer, if that's a term. And so there's not too many situations that come to mind, but I really am. Even as a homestead, you know, not being a full-scale farm, I am very mindful of what the input of, you know, financial and time is versus the output. I am not a pet person. Like every animal on our farm serves a purpose, even down to our barn cats and our livestock guardian dogs. I don't keep pets. So if they are bought with an intended purpose, you know, there's going to be times where you have to expect an adjustment period. Like if you're getting a new milk cow, you can't expect that day one, it's going to be perfect, but you can know pretty quickly if something's not a good fit with that, is not a good fit with that animal. And I think that too, it's worth considering all the people that are involved. So if it's an animal, if they're constantly breaking out and you've done the best of your ability as the, you know, steward of that animal to contain them, it's not worth the hassle. You have to get rid of them. And, or if they are being more expensive to keep than your budget can comfortably allow, then it's not blessing your family. It's actually straining you. So both the time and the money and the stress have to be considered for you and the other people. But I really can't think of, there was one steer that we raised that was like, he almost got his date with freezer camp a little bit early because he was just, that was partly mismanagement. Like we shouldn't have raised a steer by himself. We should have had two. So he had a friend to cause trouble with versus taking it out on our fences and whatnot. But that's the only time where it was like, almost needed to be changed, but thankfully he made it to his butcher date.
Yeah. For us, we've gotten rid of goats. We had goats for a while. We decided that we like a dairy cow a lot better than dairy goats. And then we also kept a Jersey bull because we were trying to, instead of doing AI with ours, keep him for a couple months. Well, not only did he not get the job done, we had to still do AI, but also he got out. It was just so scary. Yeah, we'll never do that again. He didn't actually do anything scary, but I've heard a lot about dairy bulls. And so it was scary whenever he was out thinking, okay, how are we going to get this thing back in without it killing us? So that was one of those moments where like, okay, something to consider. And then also I like what you said about the pets because we don't really treat our animals that way either. And I think some people go in with a different mindset and it can be really tricky to honestly assess when something isn't working because, you know, you have such an attachment and you can have animals as pets. So maybe don't treat every animal that way. If you are trying to use this as something that's going to benefit your family with food.
You know, one thing I can add to that actually. So our milk cow that's due to calf right now, this will be her third calf. She's over 10 years old. And she had a hard time getting bred back. We actually AI'd twice and then ended up taking her to a friend's house to be bred by their bull. And the other problem is that she has had milk fever both times that she has calved here. And we kind of decided halfway through this gestation that her time is done. This will be the last calf that she has, both for her own safety. I mean, I don't want her to go out by getting milk fever. That's not you know, a fun way to go, but also it would be best to utilize her in a different way than to just lose her suddenly and not, you know, it be wasted. So that's the reality that we had going into getting a milk cow, is that when the milk is cow is done with its, you know, production life, it's not a big pet. That is a major, yeah, major expense to not be producing anything for, you know, whatever the rest of their lifetime is. And especially as a small homestead, we have to be really mindful of what we're adding, because we have limitations. We can't just have, you know, 100 cows. So one extra one's not a big deal. Every single one is taking up space.
With 5 acres,
could be something
it's
else.
A big deal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. So this will be her last calf, and next winter time when she is done, you know, with her main production, she's done. That's just the unfortunate reality. Like I said, we'd rather utilize her for meat than just have her be wasting away or go unexpectedly and be wasted.
Yeah. And this just makes sense. And sometimes it's hard, you know, if you don't have a rural background. Like, I grew up on a farm. We sold steers every single year, you know, at the auction through 4-H. And so I very much have this like farm mindset coming into it. And I was talking at one of my homeschool co-ops with another mom, and she was talking about maybe getting chickens. And then she was talking about like something that happened with one of their barn cats or whatever, like not really barn, but just outside cats. And, you know, everybody was devastated. And I'm not saying like kids aren't devastated whenever they lose an animal, for sure. But when she was talking about getting the chickens, I said, here's just my one advice. Don't name them, because they're chickens. And like, they're, things are going to happen to chickens because everybody loves chicken. And I can tell that this is going to be really hard for you guys whenever you have your first loss with the chickens. So I think being realistic about what that could look like on a farm is probably some pretty good advice. I'm sure you've seen your share of loss on the farm.
For sure. For sure. And it, like you said, doesn't make it not sad or hard, but it's just the reality of life. It's the reality of a broken world. Things are born and they die. And if you try to avoid that, or even worse, if you try to shelter your kids from that, it just, you're not setting them up to be resilient because it's the reality of things.
Yep. It's part of that farm lifestyle that you end up just getting used to. That's maybe hard to understand before trying it. And that's like a lot of the stuff we're talking about. You almost just have to get started and try it to learn. I know a lot of people like to gather a ton of information before trying stuff, and there's just some things that you almost have to encounter. All right, we'll take a quick break from this awesome conversation to tell you about my 5-day blogging business challenge. So if you followed along for a while, you might know that Luke and I have done this exclusively from home, the blog business, for over 5 years now. He quit his job and we run my blog. Now, I also have since added, of course, a podcast. I have a YouTube channel, but the blog in itself could support our family. And I love the passive income that the blog provides. It's the least invasive for our family life. It's the easiest thing to work around. If I had to get rid of every aspect of my business, the blog would be the last to go. I love to help students learn how to do this for their own families, for their own idea, their own business, with my 5-day blog challenge. So this is 5 days to narrow down your niche, craft your brand, and come up with a content plan for a successful blogging business. Blogging is one of those things that, A, people think is dead, and I'm here to tell you that it is the most profitable part of my business, so it is so not dead. But the reason, B, they think that is because there's a strategy to it. It's not just a journal anymore. That kind of content's reserved for Instagram, for YouTube. It's different, but as big of an opportunity as ever. So if you are interested in figuring out, or you're just curious, it's totally free, about blogging, you can join my challenge by heading to bit.ly/5-day-blog-challenge. That's bit.ly/5-day-blog-challenge. It's case sensitive, so all lowercase. All right, hope that that is helpful for you. One of the questions we got on our audience questions was about equipment. So this person says, we're getting ready to move from town to the farm we've been preparing. We'll need at minimum some type of tractor. something to move livestock, a trailer, something to plow snow, a massive lawn mower because they have a big size lawn. The equipment factor, especially the cost, feels overwhelming. Where to start without going into debt up to my eyeballs? So I have some stuff to say, but I'm curious what you'll say about that.
Oh, I definitely have things to say. I think first of all is if you don't want to go up to debt or up to your eyeballs in debt, then don't. If you're not going to do that, then don't do that. You have to realize that homesteading is a marathon. It's not a sprint. It has to build up over time. And like I said, there's not an instant gratification. Like, you just have to accept that things happen. And also, a big part of being a homesteader is having the mindset that you work with what you have versus getting what you need to do what you want. I mean, we have homesteaded, like I said, over a decade. And for a very, very small portion of that time, we ever owned a tractor. We don't own a side-by-side. We don't own a zero-turn lawnmower. We do the majority of our chores, and people on Instagram get a kick out of it because I call it my chore chariot. It's our riding lawnmower with a wagon tied to the back. It's missing the hood. It looks super janky, and we raise hundreds of meat chickens by hauling their feed and water in that guy. And you have to be willing to be resourceful and adjust your expectations to what you think needs to be done. It would be a lot cheaper to buy round bales to feed our cows, but we don't have the capacity to do that. So we buy square bales, and that we can move by hand. We've borrowed tractors from neighbors. We have outsourced plowing for our driveway. Yes, exactly. Borrowing, bartering. And, you know, if you are going to get a big piece of equipment, try to get something that is multi-purpose. Don't get something that is like, this is our plow truck and that's all it does. You know, get something that can be multi-purpose at least, so that way you're getting the most out of that investment. But always use cash. If you are piling up debt, in my opinion, you're completely negating the freedom that homesteading gives you because you have become a slave to this, you know, lender. So that's my initial response to that.
Mine is exactly what yours is. Like, when I first read this question, I was like, whoa, like, we've never had a tractor. We don't have a trailer. I've had to borrow a trailer probably 10 times over the last 5 years, which is annoying, but also only 10 times. It's not like, and, you know, and granted, I do have somebody to borrow it from. I have several people actually, though. Like, I have somebody. So the easiest person is my dad has a trailer. So people are like, okay, well, there you go. Your dad has a trailer. Yes. But also, somebody at church has a trailer. We borrowed theirs. We're allowed to borrow it anytime. It's just a tiny one horse trailer that we're allowed to borrow. So even if my dad didn't have his trailer, they have one. So I wouldn't consider buying a trailer because there's just very few times when you need it. A friend of mine, she puts animals in the back of her Suburban. As far as the tractor, Luke has talked about wanting a tractor sometimes, but then we also, and it's not that we literally couldn't afford it. It's that it doesn't make sense to own something depreciating in value unless you truly could use it several times. And so we're always thinking, like, how often would that make a big difference in our lives? And there's a few jobs he does where that would be very helpful, but then there's most of the time we have a four-wheeler, which is great. It's kind of like what you use your lawnmower for. We put a trailer behind the four-wheeler. That's good enough. And then we've borrowed. So we have a neighbor down the road who has a tractor. He comes by. We hired him to just like scoop up all winter's worth of cow manure to put into a compost pile. And so the cost of him coming and doing that, to me, was so much more worth it than having to keep a tractor on our farm. Now, if we ever expand, get more acreage, whatever, then at some point we're going to want a tractor. Just for our current situation, it doesn't work out for the few times that we would need a tractor to not just use the guy down the road, pay him. We hired a guy one time to fill our raised beds, a different guy with a tractor. So we've made connections in that way. We do have a zero turn lawnmower, and that's only because when we first moved here, we didn't have any pasture or anything, and we have like this massive yard. I think that that's a pretty nice thing to have. But again, we could just use a riding lawnmower. We didn't take on any debt to do it. We never would have done that. We just would have bought like something on Facebook Marketplace or something to get the job done. But I do find this, just don't do that. Like you said, just don't. You don't have to do that. You don't have to get any of this stuff. I mean, maybe someday if you can afford it and it actually makes sense for the number of times you'll use it, then, you know, but the whole equipment thing, that's just crazy. Try to be creative. Don't buy all that stuff. Trying to put it nicely here, but like, I want to get all Dave Ramsey on this person.
Me too.
he'll say it a lot more blunt, like, are you crazy?
Yes.
Okay. So I think we got through most of the audience questions. I mean, there's so many more on like managing a full plate, but again, I feel like it's tricky to explain it without, like, each person needs to find their own systems and their own rhythms. And once you get started on something, you'll figure out how that works. Like, not just in theory, you'll figure out how you fit it in. If right now everything in your life feels so beyond overwhelming that you don't even devote brain space to thinking about these things, maybe it's not the time to do it. You know, if you're dreaming about it like crazy, well, then get a couple chickens, maybe add on from there. Do you have anything to add to that? Like helpful tips for somebody who feels like, I really want to do this, but also my plate is so full. What would be your short advice on that?
Well, you kind of said earlier, like, I think people that have very, very full schedules try to see how could they fit homesteading into that type of life versus if you peeled everything back and you took everything off of your schedule or your day to day that, you know, isn't absolutely necessary. Obviously, people got to eat every day. If you've got kids, they need to get to school or be schooled. Probably have to do some laundry occasionally, though, to be totally transparent, I don't do my own laundry. I outsource that to my mom. She is amazing keeping up with our family's laundry. That's not on my plate, which allows me to do other things. But if you really took it back to basics and had to add things in one at a time and really put them against each other. I mean, do you really want to do a garden this year? Or do you want to do these family vacations? Do you want to have this, you know, milk cow? Or do you want to X, Y, Z? And you have to take it back to basics and kind of pen things against each other to figure out what your actual priorities are, because that's going to really speak to what your capacity is versus just trying to add on without accepting that things have to be taken off to add more.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really good advice. And another thing is, if you don't have to, like, this isn't your decision for the next 50 years. Like, well, we hereby decided we're having a homestead now for 50 years. This is what we're doing. I mean, we have had a dairy animal that we've been milking for 4 years now. And just recently we dried off our cow and I planned like 4 trips. We're going to see how that goes. Like, just not huge, huge things, but like 4 things throughout the next like 4 or 5 months. We're going to do that, live that life for a minute, just to, there's a few things we've wanted to do. We wanted to check off the list with our kids. And then, you know, we might come back and just get right back into it. It's okay. Things can be flexible. You can, you know, go back and forth. If, you know, you want to try a season of, okay, we've been wanting to do these certain like homeschool trips. And in order to do that, we need to dry off the cow for a bit. It's not all or nothing. And I think you do learn as you're actually implementing these things. So I think that's really good advice.
I agree.
All right. Tell the listeners where they can find you, follow along with all that you're doing on your homestead, what you guys have going on this coming year that they can follow along with.
Well, I am the most consistent on Instagram for sure. Instagram is my go-to platform.
Okay.
I do have YouTube for things that are more, they just make sense in long form videos, but Instagramming at Beth DeClercq is where I spend the majority of my time. But I do also have a lot of free resources for homesteaders, which is intentionalhomesteading.com. And there's, I'm kind of a printables junkie. I like making lists and I like making like quick reference guides and things like that. So when I make them, I share them and people can go and download them, and hopefully it saves them time of trying to figure out and get organized. I've done the work for them, but those are the 2 or 3 main places.
Right. Yeah. Certain things that you've always figured out. Yeah. Cool. Okay. Well, that will all be linked down in the description box or the show notes based on where you are listening or watching this episode. Thank you so much, Beth. I feel like you have so much wisdom to share over your over a decade of homesteading experience. I'm sure the listeners will be very inspired by it.
Thanks, Lisa. Appreciate spending time with you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode, and I will see you in the next episode of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast.